plate a potential nugget.
And the other thing you suggest, which once again intrigued me, was you say that you try and use your art to represent the story that resonates with us the most. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, what's the benefit of doing that?
Yeah. I'm going to say that there's a couple of different things. First one is, it's not art itself so much as using different parts of our brain to work on a concept helps our brain remember that concept. So, for example, speaking about it is different from reading about it, and reading about it is different from drawing it. And they all can reveal something different that helps our brain process it deeper and deeper. So that's, I think that's one really important thing. A second thing is, I'm not an expert in what I'm going to say now, but art seems to use a part of our brain that doesn't need words. So it's going to be hard for me to talk about this, but it appears in the science that when we draw, and I don't even mean in an like a way that is literal. I don't mean like you draw an event, like here's the person holding the ball as the child threw it. I mean more like it might be a splash of color on the page that this is how this story made me feel. Or it might be a bunch of shapes that you made out of clay that here's how that day made me feel. But what using art seems to allow us to do is express our emotions and almost unconscious ideas that our words just don't do justice to. So let me give you a specific thing that I do. And by the way, I'm not saying that this is for everybody. I'm saying that different people also learn in different ways. But in my own class here, I have a class on sort of creating change in our own lives and in our organizations. What I do is I have them read their best self report the night before. I help them debrief it in the morning. And then in the afternoon, I bring in an artist who works with them. For instance, he'll have them illustrate with pastels the way that one of the stories made them feel. And then he'll have them use, let's say, clay to have another story. And then they'll introduce those stories. They'll pair off and they'll introduce, this is what this story meant, and here's what this splash of color meant, or here's what this shape meant. And that not only allows them to articulate something in a different way, it gives them a way to talk about it with people. Deepak, have you ever heard of Lego Serious Play?
Not really.
You might think about Lego.
My son is a big fan of Lego, but I'm not aware of Serious Play.
Exactly. Well, so Lego is something we usually associate with kids and play, which it is, but it also is something that we're now using in leadership courses and in training to allow people to build their thoughts. Because when you build a three-dimensional thought, you then can hold it up and show people and describe it. It becomes a prop that pulls ideas and concepts out of ourselves. So there's a whole literature on that, by the way. But yeah.
Wow. Lego Serious Play, is it?
That's right. That's right. I have a book called Alive at Work, and I have a whole chapter dedicated to that because it's becoming science. It's one of these really fun ideas that there's now really good research on, and it's showing that it makes our brain work differently and better to be playful and tactile with our ideas.
Since you mentioned it, do you want to just maybe spend a minute or two on it? How do we use Lego just to, in the context of leadership development?
Okay.
Just maybe expand on that.
I'll even go one step farther. In the context of career transitions, which I work with, we have a program here called the Sloans, and it's a one-year MBA kind of program for very senior folks that are like going into a new direction in their careers. We have them work on who they were in their last job. And we literally have a session with Legos where, you know, there'll be little people and there'll be hoses and there'll be building blocks and windows and doors and trees. And we'll just say, okay, pick 25 pieces and then assemble them in a way that shows us who you are in your job today. And we'll give them 25 minutes to do that. And then we'll say, okay, now grab 25 more pieces and draw what you are going to move toward. in 15 years from now, if everything worked out perfectly, who would you be? What would you be doing? What would be your role? And so then we have them do that 25 minutes. And then what we do is we put those two together and we say, now describe to somebody what it meant and what it will be. And boy, the room just lights up because like the hose that they use to represent feeling strangled or the prison, they build a block and they put a little person in it and say, this is me. I feel like I'm in a prison. And it just becomes animated and emotional. And by pointing at it, by turning it, it reveals things that they meant to say, but like they wouldn't have said it unless it was there. They'll put a skeleton there and say, this is how I usually feel today. And then on the other one, they'll sort of build a person out of vibrant colors and say, this is what I want to feel like. And boy, does it just becomes really fun instead of static. It becomes enjoyable and dynamic instead of kind of, oh, I don't know, overly cognitive. So anyway, I'll stop going on about it, but it does appear there's some really interesting science that when we allow our hands to build our ideas, we end up in a different and sometimes better place than when we just rely on a verbal medium.
Fascinating.
We have so much to learn, Deepak. It's one of the things that thrills me. I think I want to say that out loud. I love remembering that we don't really know that much about our brains and our emotions. You know, even in physics, in the physical world, we've only known about gravity for 400 years. So we've only started learning about our brains in the 1980s. You know, we didn't know about behavioral plasticity really until the 90s. So I love to remember that what we don't know is much bigger than what we know.
Absolutely. And another reason why I do this podcast is, you know, A, it gives me an opportunity to talk to people like you and learn from what you've learned. But the other thing I find fascinating is I come in thinking I'll learn ABCD, but I end up learning ABCD and then some EFGH, which is totally different.
I love it, yes.
So I came in to learn about exceptional and I walked away learning not just about exceptional, but Lego serious play, which was completely in my blind spot, right? Which is the beauty of these conversations.
That's right.
This insight from Dan reminds me of my conversation with Jennifer Goldman-Wetzler, a conflict management expert, who speaks about the notion of engaging our emotions while speaking to others. In our conversation, she alludes to the great I Have a Dream speech by Martin Luther King. And she actually goes on to say that one of the reasons it's such a great speech is because it engages all our senses.
And the best way that I know how to engage our imagination is to make it really concrete, actually, by using our five senses plus our emotions to imagine what the future could be like. And if you watch Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech, it is unbelievable the way that he uses language to help us imagine the future that he wants for us by using the senses of sight, sound, touch. He talks about the valleys and the mountaintops. He talks about quicksand and then hearing the ringing bells of freedom. So you can feel that quicksand that you might be sinking into, but then you can hear those bells of freedom ringing. And so that imagery, that's such a great concrete example that he provides for us of what we can do for ourselves. So I encourage us all to be our own Martin Luther King Jr. and imagine what would it look like then? What would it sound like then? What would it feel like then? So, for example, I've had clients say to me, you know, I can imagine going out for dinner with this person who I work with, who I've been in serious conflict with, and I can smell the wine that we would be drinking, and I can taste the food, and I can smell it coming out of the kitchen from the restaurant that we're going to be in, and I can really imagine the good feelings that I will have from connecting with this person in a different way than we have been over the last many months.
At a very personal level, I took the plunge to move from a corporate career to what I do now around February 2016. A few months later, I think around September or October 2016, the movie MS Dhoni released. This was played by Sushant Singh Rajput, who's no longer with us anymore. Over the weekend, I learned the guitar and I was learning the chords of the song Besabriya from the movie MS Dhoni. And I listened to the words. Kya ye ujale? Kya ye andhere? Dono ke aage hai manzar tere. Kyun roshni tu bahar talashe? Teri mashale hai andar tere. Kyun dhoondna pairon ke nishan? Jaye wahi le jaye jahan. Besabriya, 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 besabriya. And so on. Now just that line, Kyun roshni tu bahar talashe, teri mashale andar tere, touched a part of my heart that words hadn't. Sorry to break into a little bit of Hindi and Bollywood, but for people that don't understand Hindi, it basically means, why are you looking for a light from outside to guide you? Why don't you listen to the fire that's burning inside you so strongly? Maybe it was the stage of my life. But there's something so powerful about art and how it touches you. I guess this song is even more poignant today given Sushant Singh Rajput is not with us anymore. But in the context of this particular podcast, if I link it back to what Dan is saying, Teri Mashale Andar Tere is a bit like activating your best self based on insights from your past.